We're going to be having our panel now. So text us on 51551 if there's anything you want to say to the guys. We've got Raymond Burns, who was a European Tour professional golfer, Aoife Murray, winner of 9 All-Ireland titles in Go for Cork in Camogie. And we have Irish Times journalist Ian O'Riordan with us as well. Hello to all of you.
Hi, John.
Good afternoon.
First of all, Raimi, because the golf is obviously huge this weekend, and we assumed that we'd be largely focusing on the two men who are in action over in Torrey Pines, but it's a Cavan woman who's kind of taking the spotlight
at
the moment.
Yes, amazing. And Dermot Byrne, who's a great caddy, is caddying for this week and seems to be a great gel. She's got a lot of fierce competitors coming from behind her, but she's been showing signs for quite a while now. She's a tremendous, gritty golfer, a gritty competitor, very well trained and a great putter and a great wedge player. So there should be no reason why she can't keep up with these best lady golfers in the world. It's great to see. You know, the week of the US Open, it's even more spectacular for her to be up there. I think she's teed off early today, which is on the golf course at the moment. There's a lot of firepower behind her, but she's very gritty, very determined, and hopefully tomorrow we could have an Irish winner of a first time ever of a LPGA Tour event, which would be wonderful for the country. Wonderful world golf.
It would be amazing because no woman has won on the European Tour or the LPGA, so it'd be incredible, wouldn't it?
It'd be an incredible achievement, you know, on all the work that the Golf Union and her coach, you know, Grady and her family have made over, and Duke University have made over the last, I suppose, just 10, 12, this girl has been, I've heard about her maybe 12, 14 years ago. She's the sort of the Irish Rory McIlroy of that golfing fraternity, and it's great that she's kept up that fierce competitiveness, and she's obviously, it's a great combination, say, with the caddy and the course. She seemed to like. She said it played very like the one across the road at Ellen Park or these tight tree-lined golf courses. So it obviously sees her eye. But as she's shown a lot of low scores coming through the last couple of months, and it'll just be fantastic if she could pull it off.
Day three is always significant, I presume, especially when you're like Leona, because as Greg was saying, she's still technically a rookie, and you're going into day three. You have a 3-shot lead, which obviously sounds lovely and comfortable, but I can't imagine the mind games that it must play. And don't they tend to set up the courses in particular ways on the third round?
They could set up the flags where I think with a big shot lead, like the 3-shot lead, is quite a big shot lead in any golf tournament. But she has to go out with her mindset. She's smart. She knows. She's been there before, not in an LPGA Tour event, but she will go out with, you play smart. You don't play stupid golf. She's got a great recovery game. If she does get in trouble, she's an amazing putter, and the best putters on a week nearly win, and a great recovery game in all aspects, and she drives the ball a lot further now than she did before. But she's just on the world stage this class of field that she's playing with is just phenomenal. It's a big prize event, and let's see if she can bring it home. But I don't see any reason why. Mentally it's tough, but she's there because she likes that. She likes it down and dirty. You know, that's the way it is. You know.
Just turning our attention, we'll bring Aoife and Ian in shortly, but the US Open itself, a man by the name of Richard Bland, would he have been a contemporary of yours on the
Absolutely.
Tour?
Absolutely. Richard has been on the
He's
tour.
He's 48, now, so Richard. I don't want to give away your age, but...
Well, there's a year between us, and Richard has been playing at Say Golf for probably nearly three decades anyway. He's been in Challenge Tour. I think he's been to the tour school 8 times. An amazing, gritty player. Played all through junior golf, Challenge Tour golf. I think he played with Cormac Sharvin a few years ago. They qualified together on the European Challenge Tour. He won in the Belfry a few weeks ago. Always had it in him. Just didn't probably have the belief. Has got the belief. Went to San Diego this week. His golf, probably one of the greatest old-style golf swings in the world of golf. It just goes up and down the line. He's 5 under par. Let's see how it plays out this afternoon, because you're playing Torrey Pines and leading, especially Torrey Pines leading the US Open. It's got a difficult challenge, but he's nothing to lose, Richard. He's the best putter there at the moment this weekend. He hasn't 3-putted this weekend, the last 2 days. So if he keeps that focus and keeps the good energy going through and starts hitting the fairways the way he's been doing it, I don't see any reason why he can't stay up with the leaders for the next couple of days.
Well, given what Phil Mickelson did just a month ago, you know, it's no longer a case of the younger you are, the better chance you, the better prospects.
No, the golfers are certainly a lot more conditioned now. Their bodies are more conditioned. They're playing golf longer. Their mental side probably is an older guy. They've dealt with all the, you know, the bad feelings that you get from playing past golf tournaments. And if you get over that fear and say, okay, I'm not going to play a reckless golf. I'm going to play fun golf. Bubba Watson's doing the same thing at the moment. Kevin Streelman, 42. You know, Phil Mickelson obviously won the PGA. Incredible victory, incredible win. And suppose you're at that age. Lee Westwood, look what he's done this year. 2 seconds in the PGA Tour, which is phenomenal golf at his age. He's been playing around Richard Bland's time as well. So it's phenomenal, you know, the age groups when you see 19, 18, 17-year-olds competing at PGA Tour events and also 50-year-olds winning them. Like, it's quite incredible.
We might talk in a little more about that shortly. I'm still looking at the scenes in Budapest where the Hungarian fans are going absolutely crazy. They're still leading France by a goal to nil. And of course, one of the Irish test events for crowds won't have quite the same numbers. Hopefully it'll have a decent atmosphere though, Aoife Murray, which of course is the Camogie League final, which is taking place tomorrow. Going Kilkenny. It must be brilliant, first of all, having the Camogie final included amongst the test events, but it's going to be live on RT2. You've got two of the top three teams in action. I presume you're excited about it.
Yeah, and in fairness, I suppose when the tickets came out for sale, like, Paltry was one of the first ones to go on and actually get tickets, because it's been so long, and it's great that it is one of the test games for getting back to seeing games live. I for one are very excited about it. The top two teams in it, probably the best two performing teams in the league, are there, and hopefully, I suppose more importantly, it's just a great game.
I'm laughing at how you change from the top two teams to the best two performing teams in the league.
I know. I suppose I have to try to get Cork in there somewhere. Cork could have been there, only unfortunately they couldn't take their chances, really, and I think they'll see it as a lost opportunity, because I think with Championship coming up, there was a big scramble between Cork and Tip to get that extra competitive game in.
The Ireland 20s have just gone over with their captain, actually, Alex Kendallin, getting the fourth and the bonus point try. So Ireland leading 24-7 against 14-man Scotland, bonus point in the bag. Aoife, were the games leading up to this, we obviously have Galway and Kilkenny in the final, but were you surprised at just how tight so many of the games were in this year's league?
Not really, because in fairness, I suppose there was such a short lead up, training wise, to get into games, that a lot of teams were going to be rusty. And I think you could see in the first one or two rounds, you know, balls getting dropped out of the hand, first touch poor, maybe girls not getting to that full 60 minutes of fitness. So I expected that there was going to be some ups and downs throughout the league. I wasn't surprised, for example, with how Tipperary performed in the semi-final. I actually think they'll be disappointed that they didn't just take that final step and get into the final. The opportunity certainly was there for them. You know, then you look at the likes of Kilkenny, All-Ireland champions. They had quite a seesaw journey to get to the final, just about getting over Dublin, then shooting the lights out in their next game, and then having a struggle with Tip. But to be honest, Joanne, that's just the league and that's how it is. That first half performance with Kilkenny, I've gone through it myself with Cork. It's really slow to start. It's hard going. You're not working hard enough. And then you come out and you have a very good second half. So for me, it was kind of a standard league with regard to the ups and downs. A few almost surprises. I'm trying to keep a track on the Dublin and Waterford game, because to be honest, that's probably one of the biggest games this weekend as well.
We have 1-10 apiece in front of us. Is that what you have?
I think Dublin are just up 1 point now. Okay. 111 to 110 to Dublin, and it seems to be going point for point at the moment. So it just goes to show how tight, I suppose, the bottom side of that table is. And look, whoever loses here today, it is a big, big loss to go down to Division 2.
Would be huge for the two of them in All-Ireland quarterfinals very recently. That's the relegation final. We'll chat about that, actually, because that's significant in a little while. 3,000 people allowed into the Camogie, and Ian O'Riordan, 2,400 allowed in this evening. Are you going to go to the, are you able to go to the Derry Offaly Division 3 final this evening?
I'm not on duty actually this evening, Joanne, but just listening to there with the talk about the crowds coming back, and I think like a lot of journalists, media, I've spent the best part of the last year going around the country covering matches with no crowds at all, and it's been a strange experience. I think there was a few hundred left in at Newbridge last Sunday for the Meath Kildare, the Division 2 playoff, and even then it made such a difference. It just adds so much to the whole occasion, and I can only imagine what it must be like for the players, for the managers and all of that. And I was actually chatting to John Mon during the week as well. he's out this evening with his Offaly team, and he was saying he's getting sick of hearing his own voice on the sideline. So I think it's been a long testing year on so many fronts, but hopefully this is the beginning of the end in terms of those empty stadiums that we've all been sitting in for so long.
And Dean, I was just reading your piece in the Irish Times this morning. You were talking about a documentary maker and his focus, I think, on 9 potential Olympians.
Yeah, it was just coincidence, actually, John. This coming out, it's going out on RTE next Monday week, so that's the June 28th. And this is the third series. You might remember they did the London Calling, they did a Road to Rio, whereby they follow, 9 or 10 athletes over the course of, up to 2 years out, and sort of the highs and lows and the roller coaster. So Darragh Bambrick is the filmmaker there, but of course, these Olympics have not been in like Olympics like any other. So not only do you have your usual sort of trials and tribulations, but you throw in a global pandemic where the whole thing is, it seems like it could be dead in its tracks for a while. And even up to a couple of weeks ago, people weren't sure whether the Olympics were going to happen, whether they were going to go ahead. So it's a fantastic documentary. I got to get a sneak preview of it, and I kind of felt a bit guilty because the actual athletes themselves, they don't get to see it themselves. It's a kind of a trust thing, so they don't actually even know what's going out. But it's a, dare I say, an all-star cast like Kieran McGeehan, Kelly Harrington, Shane Ryan, one of the top swimmers we have now. So it's a really great insight. Greatest. But I think more than anything, it just goes to show what the athletes have had to endure over the last 12 months when literally, like the message was changing constantly whether the Olympics were going to happen, whether they're not going to happen. And funny, I'm looking at a countdown clock here behind me. It's 33 days and counting. So they're coming on fast. And look, I know there's been a lot of debate and discussion about the pros and cons of these Olympics going ahead, but I think I've been consistent on this all along, and I think they should happen. I think they should happen for the athletes, number one. I know from an IOC point of view, it really comes down to two things, and that's probably money and then more money, but I still think ultimately when these games get underway that it'll be a positive development for Japan and hopefully for the whole world.
Do you have that clock in your house? Because I heard you say recently I've got a countdown clock behind me and it's got X, Y, or Z on
yes,
it.
Yes, it's just on the Tokyo website, yeah, so every time you open that you get a reminder of it, yeah. So it's
okay, you don't have it framed in your back wall.
No, and then of course the Paralympics begin just 2 weeks later. So it's a huge event for Tokyo and Japan. But I think as well, like, I know there's been a lot of debate about whether it's just the right thing to do to have 10,000 odd people go into Japan in the midst of a global pandemic. I don't think it's as bad as people are maybe making it out to be on the ground. I know there's been some opposition. I don't think that's quite as dramatic as maybe some of the polls might suggest. I've spoken to a few people out there and they're quite comfortable with the games going ahead. And I've been to Tokyo before and it's a city of the best part of 24 million people when you include the whole metropolitan area. And even though the Olympics are the biggest sporting event in the world, it's still a drop in the ocean, really, in a city the size of Tokyo.
We could bring you a result in that Division 1 relegation final. It's finished. Dublin won 11, Waterford won 10. That's a result in the Littlewoods Camogie League. But it's we'll be back to our panel shortly, but it's time to go racing now. The big race at Down Royal, the Boyle Sports Ulster Derby, about to get underway.
Just before we do, France have just equalised against Hungary. Antoine Griezmann, who has got the goal, so sorry for interrupting
Hot
there.
Hot off the presses.
One all, a lovely finish as well. Sorry, we were about to go to Owen Ward. Sorry, Owen.
No problem, Joanne. Thanks very much. Yes, loading well underway now for our feature race here at Down Royal. It is the Boyle Sports Ulster Derby, a field of 13 go to post. We do go without number 6, Wild Dollar, due to the quickening ground conditions, and that is due to the warm weather that we have here. The spectators, the 500 spectators that have been welcomed back to Down Royal, really have been treated to some sublime weather. But talking of our feature contest, this is the Ulster Derby, over a mile and a half for the three-year-olds. Plenty of them stepping up to a mile and a half for the first time. One of them, however, that is proven at this trip is the one that's coming for notable market support. It's one of three in the race for Aidan O'Brien. It is King of the Castle. He's the pick of Shamey Heffernan. Shamey would have had the choice of the three O'Brien runners in this. And although King of the Castle, a son of Galileo, who is a maiden after 4 outings, he was last seen finishing 3rd at Leopardstown last month. Now, the first two in that race have gone on to subsequently finish placed in the listed Nijinsky Stakes. So that form really working out from Leopardstown. Other ones to the 4, well, Safari Quest and She Is Hybrid, both of them have been to the 4 for the betting once the prices came out. Safari Quest is the mount of Gary Carroll, who of course had his first success at Royal Ascot recently. One of the horses just getting a bit upset in the stalls. Of course, the loading process has been quite slow here for the Ulster Derby. So some of the horses have been locked away in the stalls for some time. It was hell-bent Tom Madden's mount who was getting worked up. But Tom, back aboard the Son of Master Craftsman. She Is Hybrid is the other one for market support. Has been raised £9 for a course and distance success here 2 weeks ago. So they're all set. We're underway for the Boyle Sports Ulster Derby over a mile and a half. This race, which was first run back in 1936. And it is Snowy Owl, one of six runners in the race for the O'Brien family. This one represents Dunnock O'Brien, is one of the first to show Bear Story in Star Harbour. They're also 2-4 in company with New Reality as they race on through the opening furlong. Hector Damari, who looked to become just the second top weight in the last 30 years to win the Ulster Derby, he's dropped out as the overall back marker. She is Hybrid, also towards the tail of the field in company with Prairie Dancer and Kailash as they turn right-handed and head into the back straight. Safari Quest is the one that's come through, represents the Jer Lions Yard and has got the advantage by a length now to Snowy Owl, the most experienced runner in the race, having his 12th start here today. Star Harbour for Chris Hayes and Ada McGuinness, that stable already in the winner's enclosure so far this afternoon. Races in the third position. Kailash is one that's making good ground on the outside, carries the colours of the Aga Khan. King of the Castle, the market movers, moved into fifth position now. Races just in advance of Bear Story. After these races, Iowa, and one of the three Aidan O'Brien runners in the race. She is Hybrid is posted wide in company with Rat Tib, one of two Joseph O'Brien runners in the race. Hell Bent, who was a winner at Sligo just over a month ago, stepping up by two furlongs here today as they head on towards the seven furlong marker. Iowa's towards the back end of the field with Hector Damari, and She is Hybrid is the overall back marker. So climbing as they head into the final six furlongs in the Boyle Sports Ulster Derby, it is Safari Quest who has the advantage. Leads now by less than a length as Snowy Owl has made good progress on the outside and has the advantage of Safari Quest down to less than half a length. Kailash races on the outside of Star Harbour. Bear Story and King of the Castle, they complete the front half dozen. After these races, Rat Tib, who's trying to improve his position. New Reality, Jim Bulger, has a notable strike record in this race, but New Reality is dropping back, improving as Hector Damari, the top weight, as they turn for home with three furlongs left to race. It's all to play for in the Ulster Derby. Kailash now comes to tackle Safari Quest. Bear Story looms large with Rat Tib from the back of the field. She is Hybrid's one on the move. They head inside the final quarter of a mile. King of the Castle, Hector Damari, is next, rounding the elbow, less than a quarter of a mile to race, and it is Bear Story who's come through in the centre against the rail. Kailash, here now comes Star Harbour. After these is Iowa, runs a huge race. She is Hybrid is next. They race inside the final furlong. It is Bear Story in the centre, but it's now Iowa and Michael Hussey for a big upset has powered through for the Aidan O'Brien Yard. King of the Castle is storming home, but it is going to be Iowa, Michael Hussey and Aidan O'Brien. It's a 1-2 for the Aidan O'Brien Yard as he records his second Ulster Derby. Big upset. Third was Bear Story being followed in by Prairie Dancer. After these was Star Harbour being followed in by Hector Damari. After these was Rat Tib. Safari Quest really disappointed. New Reality is next. And the last one to go by the line was Snowy Owl. Well, Aidan O'Brien had two of his three runners were maidens coming into this one. All the attention had been for King of the Castle, who was the big market mover after his third at Leopardstown. However, it was Iowa, the second string for the O'Brien Yard, who came through, really picked up strongly in the hands of Michael Hussey inside the final quarter of a mile. This son of Galileo, he's a brother of Hawksmoor, who's a five-time stakes winner. Well, what an occasion for Iowa to break his maiden tag. And this is a notable success for Michael Hussey, a name you don't hear all that often day-to-day in the racing world, has been attached to the Aidan O'Brien Yard for quite some time, the 39-year-old from Ballinteer in Dublin. Well, this is only the fourth fixture of the season that he's ridden at, and he's landed a big one as Iowa wins our Ulster Derby at a price of 14-1.
Okay, thank you for that, Owen. In Formula One news, Max Verstappen has stormed into pole position for the French Formula One Grand Prix. The Red Bull Championship leader set a time of 1 minute 29.990, beating Mercedes title rival Lewis Hamilton by 0.258 seconds. The Briton's teammate Valtteri Bottas was third. Just to confirm that in Group F, it is now Hungary 1, France France won. France have equalised in the last few minutes. And Mbappe crossed the ball and the Hungarian defender could only touch it out to Antoine Griezmann, who gratefully accepted the opportunity. So there it is at, 72, 73 minutes gone in Budapest. And it's Hungary 1, France 1. Back with our panel in a moment.
Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Day three of the LPGA Classic, the Meyer LPGA Classic in Michigan. Leona Maguire started with four straight par, so that keeps her on 15 under par. But where things are significant is that the Swede Madeleine Sagstrom, she's four under for her first six holes, and Nelly Korda of the United States is three under for her first five holes. So there's low scoring out there, and those two players have moved to 13 under par. So they've closed the gap just by one at the moment. They're on 13 under. Leona Maguire is on 15 under par, and there are plenty of players underneath on 12 under. And as Greg was telling us earlier, a lot of those are big, big names as well. But it's Maguire who's still holding on to lead on 15 under par in the very, very early stages of her third round as well.
I can tell you that in the rugby in the under 26 nations, it's Scotland 7, Ireland 31 tries from Alex Sirocco and a penalty try in the first half, followed by tries in the second half by Sam Illo, Alex Kendallin and Shane Jennings. And at the moment, I can tell you that they're making a verdict, delivering a verdict on whether Ireland have indeed scored another try through Shane Jennings. I don't think he's related to the other Shane Jennings.
he certainly doesn't look like him.
No,
I reckon he's got it. The question is whether or not the ball had actually travelled past the end line or not. I think it's just on the line, isn't it?
Or whether he knocked it on. I think that's the issue at stake here. But anyway, Ireland with the bonus point. Scotland 7, Ireland 31. And with us, our panel, Camogie's Aoife Murray, Irish Times journalist Dino Reardon, and golfer Raimi Burns. Raimi, the club, you're the professional at Lachine Springs, formerly South County, in Bridis in County Dublin. How have clubs been responding to, we say, the good news when it comes to being able to reopen again? Has it been a big challenge, first of all, the whole lockdown?
Yeah, I think it's been a huge challenge from the point of view, from a business perspective, from the golf clubs and the members of the golf clubs. Luckily, most of the Irish golfing fraternity have paid their subs, and they haven't obviously played golf for almost 6.5 months out of, I suppose, 14, 15 months. It was quite difficult during the winter, you know, in regards to the Golfing Union as well, probably trying to get different protocols in place through the Sport Ireland. But, you know, I think when everybody eventually hit that first golf ball a few months ago and got back to golf, I think that all was forgotten about. You know, I think we were in the process of trying to save as many lives as we could, get the vaccine thing rolled out. So I think overall, between all parties, Golfing Union, the members, the actual punter himself, golf professionals, we all dealt with it at best. It was a huge, you know, it has seen massive uptake in the game. A huge amount of people have took the game up, men, ladies, young people have took the game up. I've never seen as many people talk about golf and playing golf. And I think that was a lot of it when there was very little sport on. The PGA Tour sort of led the way of world sport. January, February, we were watching the PGA Tour in California and Florida, and that gave us a sort of a mantle to what, you know, we're talking about now, whether the Olympics will be played, the Euros is on now. That's given everybody in Europe a great bit of hype and getting people to think of their country and their passion for football, and that's showing the way maybe going forward, maybe into the Olympics. And I think we have to get on with it at some stage. There's not as many deaths with COVID, certainly in this part of the world. And from my own personal perspective, we've tried to keep everybody as safe as possible. The older generation are more or less vaccinated now. The younger generation are getting vaccinated. So it's something we're probably going to have to live with for quite a long time. But I'm delighted that from the support from all the membership of golf clubs all over Ireland and the Golfing Union in Ireland, the sport, Golf Ireland as we call it now, have done a tremendous job, and hopefully they'll keep doing a tremendous job and keep the golf courses open and keep people safe.
And Aoife Murray, obviously there was a great big concern as well as over whether, I think, girls in particular would return to sport. So it's great to see some of the games we've had in both the women's football and the Camogie as well. And you pointed out the significance of this Division 1 relegation final that's just over. 1 point win for Dublin over Waterford. Ashling Amar got 1-8 for Dublin in that. How is it that the two of these two counties are battling it out for relegation, given how close they've seemed to come in the last few years in the Championship?
I think you have to look at maybe, I suppose, the past few years, starting with Dublin. They've had a lot of changes in the backroom team. So they've had no consistency over the last probably 2 to 3 years, and that can't help you. I think even Ashley Murray has been quoted about the likes of Galway and Cork, where there's been this steadfast management there for a number of years, and at least when you go back every year, you know what you're going back into.
Well, there were issues in Galway as well a few years ago, not that long ago.
No, but at least when Cathal Murray has come in, he has put his own stance, shall I say, on it. The girls know exactly what he's about. They were delighted when he was appointed, and it was the absolute right choice. So I think when they see that, even with Brian Dowling, he was in the backroom team in Kilkenny and now he's come up as manager. So there is consistency, Joanne, and that is the key thing here. Paddy's been there in Cork for, I don't know, 10 years now at this stage. So there is a consistency, and other teams are beginning to look at this and going, we need to know what we're going back to. Waterford had some changes as well over the last number of years. And I think they've now seen, I suppose, the results of that, now in a battle off for Division 1, Waterford going down. And I suppose that's the biggest shock of the league, really, Joanne, isn't it? Seeing the likes of Waterford, quarter-finalists over the last number of years, now going down to Division 2. And it's a harder journey back up into Division 1.
Isn't it an overall concern, though, for the game as well? Because we've seen the new levels that Cork, Kilkenny, Galway have got to in the last few years. We have seen, even just in recent weeks, Tipperary in particular trying to keep up there. But obviously Limerick have put in these great performances as well. We have to see from a consistency point of view how that continues. To see these teams who look like they were doing likewise only a few years ago dropping off from the top level, like as a person so involved in the game, is this a major concern for you?
It's not a major concern. I think it's up to, we point the finger an awful lot at county boards and setups and everything like that. But players can drive standards as well, Joanne. And listen, I was in that situation in 2011. We didn't have the greatest of management team, and as players we had to take the mantle at training, get ourselves through games, and we lost the semi-final, and we made the decision, we went to the county board and said, this cannot go on, because if we keep going on, Cork will no longer be competitive at the top table, and we feel that that's where Cork Camogie belongs, and we had to do that as a group of players.
But Aoife, you had a load of All-Irelands behind you as well.
We also had two absolute poor years, Joanne, by Cork standards. And we had two poor semi-finals, lost the semi-finals, and we were going backwards. And as players, we knew we were going backwards. So you can say it's because we had a load of All-Irelands. But the players there that year, some of them had no All-Irelands, Joanne.
Yeah.
You know, and they knew it was wrong. So I don't think you have to have a load of All-Irelands to be a player to go, actually, hang on, guys, this just isn't right. We got to sort this out. And we did. And listen, you know, OK, Paddy came in 2012. We still lost two semi-finals, two All-Irelands, and 1-4. But in the last few years, you know, as players as well, we've lost two semi-finals. So even in counties like Cork, you can have poor years, Joanne. The likes of Waterford, they have a big decision to make, I think, as a group of players and a management. Can they come together and create something in Championship? And that's what they have to look at now.
I wonder, Ian O'Riordan of the Irish Times is listening to that. And Ian, down through the years, you would have covered so many stories where players did take stances, isn't it? And it's often a fine line between which way it might go and which way perhaps the public can react to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following the debate recently about more equality in GAA, especially. We've seen now the women's GPA has gone in with the men's GPA, and I think that's always been, that was an inevitable part of that side of the sport. But if you look at, dare I say, my own sport, track and field, I mean, I've always seen track and field as absolutely equal. There's never been any difference between, dare I say, how the men's or the women's game is treated, or whether some elite athletes might get more preferential treatment. Now, of course, the old funding issue has always been knocking around. Some athletes get more funding, or they get quicker amounts of funding, or they get sort of their funding could be cut for a whole variety of reasons. But I honestly believe that whether it's athletics, GAA, swimming, whatever, that Sport Ireland deserves a lot of credit. I think the sport is in a pretty good place now when it comes to the support. And even going back to the Olympic team, with the new Olympic Federation of Ireland, we're still only 4 or 5 years away from, let's call it, the former OCI. We all know that they didn't have a great reputation in putting the athletes first. I think Team Ireland deserve a lot of credit for putting the athletes first when it comes to Olympic qualification this year. And funny enough, you just mentioned there earlier on about the rugby sevens. I've been following their progress this morning playing over in Monaco. This is a winner takes all, so only one team will progress, but it looks like they're probably going to make the semi-finals at least. And if they get into the final, they're guaranteed a ticket to Tokyo. And that'll bring the team probably up to close to 100 in terms of the Irish athletes qualified, including the women's hockey team, obviously.
Is that the biggest?
16, 17 sports. So without getting too carried away, I think it'll be the strongest Olympic team we've ever sent. And in terms of medal potential as well, I can see this possibly, what was it in London, 5 medals in London? I wouldn't be surprised if we brought home 4 or 5 medals from Tokyo as well.
Oh, I want to get back to you on that and a little bit more on that. But we have...
We're heading to Royal Ascot and Rupert Bell.
Well, yeah, just wonderful tonight, just taking the Hardwick Stakes. Frustration for the Aidan O'Brien team. They've had the one winner. They had Point Lonsdale earlier, but his full brother Broome couldn't match Wonderful Tonight, who won on Champions Day at the end of the year. We had a bit of drama earlier with some couple of protesters trying to hold up racing earlier today, but it was Wonderful Tonight, though. No problem at all. Wonderful race move coming into the straight. Broome was rallying in the final stages, but never threatened to get to Wonderful Tonight, who's a prolific Group 1 winner. Broome in second, Hookham in third at 8-1. Our next race is the Diamond Jubilee Stakes. We missed Starman, who's a non-runner because of the rain softened ground, but Dream of Dreams likely to go off favourite, having finished runner-up in the 6-furlong contest in the last 2 years.
And Jamie Osborne has gone over for another try for the Ireland under 20, so they lead the Scots 36-7. Ian O'Riordan, so you're talking about the possibility of medals, because obviously, as you said, we have this huge team likely to be going over. There aren't... Who would you stick out? Obviously, the rowing team have strong credentials. Outside of them, where are you looking?
Well, even talking, listening to Raymond talking earlier on about Leona Maguire. I mean, Leona Maguire, I would put her in certainly the medal potential category. Don't forget, we have 2 men's and 2 women's golfers going. It looks like Rory McIlroy is committed again. So you never know with Rory. Of course, the rowing team, I mean, that was officially announced during the week. We've got 6 boats, 13 rowers. That's the largest rowing team we've ever sent. And I think it's a well-known fact that Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy just absolutely dominate the lightweight pairs. And unless their boat, dare I say, sinks, I think they're certainly going to be in a medal hope. The boxing as well. I mean, Kelly Harrington, and like watching that documentary the other night about her road to Tokyo was just incredible. I mean, literally, maybe two or three weeks ago, before the Olympic qualifiers, obviously, she wasn't even sure if she'd get the chance to qualify. She comes out and wins the gold medal over there. I think Kelly Harrington is going to be very difficult to beat. A few other boxer and contenders in there possibly as well, and the likes of Brendan Irvine, Kurt Walker. There's a few outsiders, Reese McClenaghan in the gymnastics. Now, I know he didn't do too well in the European Championships, but that's because he was trying this new routine, which if he does pull it off, I'm pretty sure we'll win
him
a medal.
I wouldn't call him an outsider. I mean, he's a world bronze medalist, and European Championship.
Yeah, just in terms
of,
I know he didn't
ago.
Deliver, let's say, in the European Championships, but he's a very confident young lad. And then I think other sports, you look down the line, people like Jack Woolley, he's our first ever taekwondo competitor. And I know this might sound a bit strange, taekwondo, obviously the Koreans dominate the sport. They're in a different class, but Jack Woolley's been very smart about how he's qualified in terms of his seeding. And he was looking for as high as possible seeding, so he'll maybe avoid some of the bigger names under the later round, which it looks like he's got now. So if he can get into a medal position, a medal fight, I think he's got a great chance. Track and field, you just don't know. You just don't know in track and field. I mean, the sport, as you probably well know, Joanne, is going through a bit of a boom period at the moment, some of the times that have been run on the track and on the road. And even if you look at the likes of Ciara Magee, even for her to make a final of the 1500 metres. Thomas Barr came out last week and ran his fastest time in 3 years. If he can get into the final again, don't forget he was fourth in Rio. So yeah, it's a tough one. I never judge Olympics results per se on medals, but I certainly think if whether it's 16, 17 sports, it's certainly the most in-depth and I think one of the most qualified experienced Olympic teams that I can remember.
Raimi Burns, before we let you go, pick a winner of the US Open. Louis Oosthuizen.
I like him. I like his caddy, Colm Byrne. New combination again, like Leone and Dermot Byrne, but I think he's putting the best. He hits it so well. He's won a major before.
Did Greg say his caddy wasn't able to go over? Didn't Greg say that the Colm wasn't able to get over?
No, I think Colm's caddying for him.
Colm is caddying. I'm mixing for him. Up with somebody else then.
And I think that's my pick anyway. It wasn't at the start of the week, but it is now.
Okay, Louis Oosthuizen. You have your money on him?
No.
Okay.
And Aoife Murray, sorry, the Camogie final tomorrow, Galway against Kilkenny. They never do games that don't have any more than a couple of points in them. Sure they don't.
No, I assume that's how it'll go tomorrow. For me, looking at the both teams, it's amazing looking back at 2019 when both teams played each other. I think out of the scorers, there's only one person left, which is Gall from Kilkenny. They're all there from Galway. So I think looking at that, I would have to just go towards Galway to win. Look at their sub bench, Joanne. It's like when you look at the Galway sub bench: Cormacan, Starr, Hanafy, Cohen, Henley, and Cooney. It's a team on the subs alone. They would get on to most first 15. So look, can they manage that? I would just go slightly towards Galway. But if Kilkenny go and stop Donoghue and Kilkenny, then they'll be there thereabouts certainly.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that to Aoife Murray, to Ian O'Riordan and to Raimi Burns here with us. And they're into injury time in the game in Budapest in the Euros, and it is still 1-1 between Hungary and France, despite numerous more chances for the French, but it is heading towards a draw.